Yeah. All right, here we go.
Oh, nice.
Good morning. April
Good morning,
10th,
Tom.
2024. Hammer, ace. How we
Morning.
doing,
Got my coffee.
buddy?
Everything's good. I got 8 hours of sleep last night, which was nice because I haven't had 8 hours of sleep since our country mile started Friday morning.
Jealous.
Oh, you don't get 8 hours of sleep?
Well, not last night. And Tuesday night to Wednesday is my normal day to get a lot of sleep. And my daughter came in at 2 o'clock and she had a nightmare. And my kids have loft beds. So I had to climb up and, you know, I'm 6'1", 175, and my feet don't fit. I don't fit in the loft.
Yeah.
I fell asleep with my feet off the bed, like through the ladder hole. My feet were through the hole and I was torqued. And I had a plan of like, all right, I'm gonna get up at 5. I'm gonna do my run, take the kids to school, and then I'm gonna record with Matt. And then we got a couple meetings this morning. Well, all that's out the window because I just I woke up at 4:30. She still didn't want to get out. Still didn't want me to get out of bed. But I was like, dude, I gotta go. My back's killing me. And so then I fell asleep on the couch.
Were you always that heavy in college? Were you 175 in college?
Yep.
Really? Okay.
165 was my lightest.
All right. So I've just gone off the rails. I think the best I was running at was at 152, and I'm probably 181, 182 right now. And I don't see it, but I'm obviously the scale don't lie.
No, I mean, you know, it's, I mean, you're also a grown man. So
yeah,
you're not a 20-year-old college skinny dude that, you know, metabolism's off the charts. I'm sure your metabolism's still off the charts, but it definitely changes. So yeah, I sit healthy right around 172, 175.
Okay.
And then, you know, injury wise, I think I stay fairly injury free around that, you know, right around the 170 marker.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard.
Yeah.
Once you get a little older, but so so on this, you know, today we're going to, so you got sleep. I didn't. It's fine. I'm on my second cup of coffee. But we're going to kind of roll through some of the latest headlines. And then our subject a little bit today, we're going to talk a little later, are medals. And one of the reasons we brought that up is because in the news, there's a lot of outrage on the Boston Marathon medal having the Bank of America logo on it. So we're going to get to that. But in the meantime, Matt, how'd your workout go? What did you do last week with your team, and what'd you do for your workout?
Well, with my team, I didn't do anything because we were, my high school team was on spring break. Beeka led our high school elite through Without Limits on Monday. Just a little, fartlek run. And then, I did two taper workouts. I did 8x400, 8x400 last week, and then I just did 8x200 on Monday just to kind of get ready for this mile. The 8x200 on Monday felt really awkward just because I didn't sleep Friday, Saturday, Sunday for our country mile race. So I was just trying to, you know, shake my bones out a little bit before we toe the line Friday night down in Columbia. So
nice. Nice.
Yeah.
We did 8x3 minutes with 45 seconds rest. So a pretty short Eastern Michigan type workout last week for our team. And then along with hills, we did hills last week, fast hills, and then followed it up with 8x3s. Everybody crushed it. You know, we had some people wanting to pick it up the last two. So I said, go and do it. You know, as long as you get to the last two, you obviously want to get to that point, be able to pick it up. If you get to that point and you can't pick it up, you've gone too hard at the beginning. So, so that was our, I cut the rest a little bit on those. And then, I personally, got in about 60 last week. I tried to take it down a notch. I had like a psoas, like groin, my left groin that I had surgery on in 2019, 2020, flared up. So I'm trying to be a little careful as I get 6 weeks out from this marathon, making sure I don't trash that again, because that would be I don't think I would want to do the surgery again.
Yeah. I've never had an issue with athletes not going fast enough during workouts. Like if I assign paces, they can always hit them. I always have an issue with them going too fast, especially early on, like you noted. Like,
oh, yeah.
I always tell, you know, not every race, but most races, you always want to finish faster than what you started. I'm like, why can't we do that in workouts? Why do you guys go so fast during the first, you know, 3 or 4 reps of a workout? and you guys are just dying at the end. You're just training not only your body, but your mind, that you slow down at the end of a workout. And that's going to slow down like in the end of a race. So it's always, love progression runs just to train the mind that as the race progresses, you just naturally get faster.
We're literally training to slow down. Like at the beginning of practice, I'm just like, all right, everybody, we're going to start here. This is the workout today. Can you guess what you're going to do at the end? Anybody? Anybody want to take a wild guess? Yay, go faster. All right. Yeah. That's the goal. Boston Marathon coming up Monday. How hard is it to negative split the Boston Marathon?
It's pretty impossible. I mean, you could obviously, you know, you got to do it right. I remember running the marathon with you, Cole. Who else was with us in that group?
That was fun.
That 2:30 group. I was with you guys through about 17 miles, and then you guys just started. What did you run that year?
So that was the year we had headwinds, and I started out with you guys, and it was the most. I would say that was one of the most. The most funnest, give me a break.
Yeah.
Most fun marathon because all of you guys were there, EMU guys. And I knew we were going to the bar afterwards for sure. But but just starting, we started at like 5:50 to 6 minute pace for, and everybody was just, we were just trading spots because of the headwinds. Remember the headwinds? Yeah. We had headwinds in the rain. And then there was a breaking point. It was right after Wellesley, the college, and that was the time where like the group kind of split apart, and I was like, shoot, if I better surge, you know, to get, there was like another pack up there, and I surged that pack and then crushed the hills. It was my best year on the hills. I believe that was 2014 or 15. But I ran 2:29, pretty solid race. But I mean, again, you know, you hit the hills and then you go down the other side in heartbreak. You know, the hills aren't bad if you train on them. It's really the going down on the other side of heartbreak. After you hit that long downhill and then you get on the false flat going into the city, you still have 3 miles left, and your legs are just annihilated at that point. I've never done the Boston Marathon where at that point where you see the Sitco sign, where your legs are just not, they're not functioning. And I think that's the difference between really training specifically for the Boston Marathon, hitting the right hills at the right time. Those years we just kind of trained, and you know, I'd like to go back at some point and try to negative split. I've always tried a negative split, but I've failed.
That course is I ran a marathon called Peak to Creek up in North Carolina a few years ago, and it's basically 4 to 5 miles of rolling, and then you have 10 miles of downhill where you're losing almost 120 feet of elevation per mile. And by the time you get down the bottom of it, you're at mile 16 and you're flat the rest of the way, but it feels like you're going uphill after going downhill for 10 miles, like that false flat. It almost, your body almost gets tricked to, when you flatten out, it's like, I feel like I'm going uphill. This is horrible. So I think Boston kind of has that similar effect. The first, especially the first 4 miles, you're going downhill. And then, you know, but once you get past Wellesley, it kind of flattens out before you start kind of rolling back up before heartbreak.
You get that steep downhill. Mm-hmm. You get that steep downhill right around 13 or 14 where everybody picks it up. And then you hit the four uphills, you know, from 16, 17 up to 21. And it just like 16 to 17 to 21 is really where it begins to get tough anyway. So, you know, for those running next week who may tune in, you got to start out like where your first mile is a joke. It should feel like a jog. It really should.
We were just chatting and it was fun. And
We
were even handing off aid station.
Yeah. And the science behind that too, is if you start out downhill going too fast, you're sort of shocking your body too. If it's cold, especially you would never start a long run. If you were to go on like a 2.5 to 3 hour long run, you would never start the long run at a fast pace. You would always be like very conservative at the beginning. And then finally, when you find your groove and your rhythm, that's when you start to feel good. But, you know, Boston's tricky. It's fun. I know Dave McGilvery is doing it for the first time, like within the pack. So I'm excited for him. He's the race director / dude, that guy's a machine. So
he normally does it at the end, right?
Yeah. He normally does it at the end. Yep. So It'd be fun. I'll be tuned in, maybe get inspired to do it next year. But lastly, before we get to medals, how about, what was it? I think it's 69 high school kids went under 9 minutes in the 2 mile.
What, where at?
Katie invite.
Oh, Arcadia. Yeah, out there in California?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just think about that. 69 kids. I'm pretty sure.
I think I remember, like, back in high school, there was, like, 4 to 5 that could do it on a yearly basis. And I was like, man, like, here I was just trying to break 10. Like, I think I ran 9:52 in high school. And then I saw some results. And Arcadia is, like, that was the one invite where if you wanted to run fast as a high school kid in the 2 mile, that's where you went. And yeah, you know, it's I don't know what these kids are doing now, or better coaching or shoot. I don't know better, if the shoes. Yeah,
Matt, I hate to break it to you, it's been 20 years since we've been in high school.
Well, we're old for me. Yeah.
So there's been a lot of advancements in running, but dude, I mean, it's great to see running go from where it was, even when it was building when we were young, but like now it's 69 kids, and then you got 10 or so that broke 8:40, that broke 8:40, and then girls, same thing. Sadie Englehart, 4:34.3 in the mile.
I mean
that was like a good boys' time when I was younger.
I mean I was an average 4:30 guy. Like, that's what I would run normally.
Yeah, you're still an average 4:30 guy.
Hopefully, we'll see.
So, yeah, Sadie's going to NC State, and so is my niece Jessie from Hart, Michigan. Yeah. So
Jeff that Wolfpack, man, you know they got something going on.
Tough.
Yeah,
gonna be strong. I'll be in Raleigh a lot more, I'm sure, in the next 5 years. So
yeah,
but yeah, it's kind of the up and coming. Besides the drugs, you know, that people keep getting busted for drugs. Looks like some people in the Olympics moved up a medal. That's what it says on here. It says Alicia Montano getting the bronze medal from London 2012. You know, just crazy, yeah, man. That takes a lot of balls to take drugs, you know?
Yeah.
Is that the right? Is that fluid? Am I allowed to say that?
Well, a lot of it is because, like you just said about the advances in running over the past 20 years, I'm sure there's the advances in science where, you know, some of these drugs are undetectable. You know, the process of, you know, blood doping and then also athlete location. You know, you got these athletes, you know, traveling to higher altitudes, basically away from everybody, training for 6 to 9 months. Then they come off of 10,000 feet to sea level and then just run a 204 for their first marathon ever. It's just, it's where are these athletes coming from, you know, and what's their background? It's pretty unreal.
I think there's a big running. There's definitely a boom right now. It's interesting to see, you know, that balance between running boom, kids who like running versus kids who like the competition of running. I remember, you know, the late Paul McMullen, which is still sad to me to the day, but he did a podcast with me and it's on our channel. And he talked about that, you know, he wasn't like in love with running, he was in love with the competition. And
100%. That's exactly how I was. 100%. Yeah, I hated running. It was stupid. I was a ball sport guy. Yeah, you were probably a hockey guy.
I watched the Wings last night. Just blew it. I'm so mad. Detroit Red Wings. Like, get it together. What the heck?
They used to be
Lions,
so good.
The Lions got good and the Red Wings just blow. They turn. The tide has turned. Eiserman's got to be in the back end. Sorry, everybody. I just switched the subjects. But yeah, I loved street hockey. I played street hockey for 6 hours a day in the summer.
The Tigers started off good. The Tigers, Jerry Ammerman told me that they were 4-0 for a little bit. They're probably now 4-4 now or something.
Dude, the Michigan-Carolina connection is so crazy. I know a lot of people that left Michigan and came to Carolina. And, you know, you didn't respond to my Ohio State Michigan meme. You know, like,
no, this is the year. We're coming back. We're coming back. No, we're not talking college football right now.
We told you we'd jump around. All right. So today's main subject line we'll get to is medals. All right. And I'm just going to get the elephant out of the room here. I hope not to offend anybody who likes medals that listen to our podcast, because I personally am not a medal fan, But I understand the love for metals. Whatever people do with them, if you hang them up in your garage or your, you know, your studio and it motivates you, that's totally fine. That's fine. But the reason I wanted to talk about this is because of the social media blow up over the Bank of America logo on the Boston Marathon medal. So people have to have some perspective that I'll bet you, now I have no idea, don't know anything about why that happened, but I'm sure that Bank of America came in at a pretty high dollar for that race. And I'm sure that was in the agreement to put them on the face of the medal. And in order for these events to happen, you know, successfully and have the capital, you know, people can say, well, I paid $250 and 250 times 30,000, they're killing it. Dude, the event costs are astronomical today. Astronomical. And I can only tell you from a personal standpoint of the Wilmington Marathon that how my prices have doubled. Our costs have doubled over the last 5 years. You know, they've gone up. So
people have asked me about go ahead.
No, I was just like, first of all, what's your take on the just the standalone, not medals in general, but the logo on the Boston Marathon medal? What's your take?
Yeah, it's one. I mean, I think people for a lot of people that are going to toe the line at Boston this year, it might be their one and only chance, and it's a thing that they're going to do, and it's forever. It's, you know, something they're going to carry with them until the day that they die. And I think the medal at Boston, it should be prestigious and it should be stamped with that eternity feeling. So to have the Bank of America not might be around in, you know, for, you know, 30, 40, 50 years, whatever. Yeah, I mean, I disagree with it, but like I said, it's not my race. So I don't know the dollars behind it and what the agreement was, but maybe placing it on the back of the medal would have been better. Cause I think a lot of folks take those medals anyhow and engrave their time and name on the back of the medal. Yeah. And I'm not a medal guy anyhow. I mean, we give away in ours, we have a custom Upstate Race Series lanyard, but all of our medals are wood with a blank back. So you can write your name or whatever, your time or your experience or a quote, you know, about the race that kind of reminds you, because as a runner, you know, we do have boxes of, I do have boxes of medals of when I started road racing after college, or even in college, you get medals. I just don't have any room for them. So they all kind of start looking the same. And especially if you do the race, you know, 5 or 6 years in a row, like if you've done Wilmington 7 or 8 years in a row, you've got 8 Wilmington marathons, you might forget which medal was from what race. So I always like the idea of like putting something on the back of a medal that kind of reminds athletes of that experience. So I think the Boston, I think, you know, they probably should have left the medal off the face, but like you said, the cost of races have gone up. And you know, people have asked me like, hey, why haven't you gotten any new apparel or whatever? I'm like, stuff back in the, you know, before COVID was, I thought, cost effective. Like, oh, I can buy 500 of these, you know, socks or lanyards or wristbands or hats or buffs or whatever. And now prices have literally doubled. Like a buff used to cost $1.50. Now it's $3.25. Same thing with socks. I mean, everything's just gone up in price. So it's harder for, and the one thing that I will hate, I got an email 2 weeks ago about a race we put on a $30 5K, which the average national price of a 5K is $29.95. So $30 5K, but we didn't offer shirts. And I got a nasty email. So I can't believe we paid $30 and didn't even get a t-shirt. And so like part of me wants to like list like, oh, reservation fee, permit, insurance, you know, like just all of these things that go into the production of a race. I'm like, it's tough to justify spending, you know, that kind of money on medals. And if you don't get corporate sponsors like Bank of America, some of these mid to major, you know, marathons don't happen. And I know Boston Marathon probably doesn't make money on the race itself. I mean, you can do the math, 30,000 times, what is it? $200, $190 for that marathon.
Yeah. I think it's 250.
Yeah. So, you know, you do the math on that. And then just the sheer cost of everyone having a t-shirt, a medal, closing down 26 miles of road, just the hit on the industry. I mean, they make money on their tourism, probably their hotels, their restaurants, stuff like that. But the race itself probably doesn't, it just probably breaks even.
Sure. I'm sure they have it down to a math that they probably make money at this point. I know they raised their prices, at some point in the mid 2015, the 2000 teens. But back to the medals, you know, and again, I reiterate, me personally, if a race emailed me and said, Tom, you know, we're running low on medals, you know, or would you forfeit your medal? I would be first one to raise my hand. Yes. I don't put it on that level of importance. I'd rather have somebody that wants it to get it. But if that does happen, for listeners out there, here's just a couple things that I've experienced with medals. And I've had great experiences. Like after my race, or our race in Wilmington, or any race really for that matter, you walk around town and you see people wearing the medal because they made that accomplishment, or in the airport. It's cool. It's like, oh, they're good. They did the Boston Marathon, or hey, they did the Wilmington Marathon. They're out at the bar afterwards or a restaurant. It definitely elevates, you know, the post-race vibe, right? Mm-hmm. You're wearing your medal. I even wore my medal after the Boston Marathon when we went out. Everybody does.
Yeah, we all did.
Kind of a thing. I think the obsession over it is where I kind of draw the line. And about, I think it was in the mid-2017 or 18, our medals didn't show up for the race. We knocked it out of the park at this event. We offered everybody pajama pants that had their race distance on them that year. And then we sold and added on a t-shirt. And people loved the pajama pants. But unfortunately, there was a snowstorm and the medals got delayed. They didn't show up. We did everything we could to get those medals here. They didn't show up. Man, we got torched online. Yeah. It didn't matter how good the race was. We still got torched. Mm-hmm. People feel they have the audacity to go on and say, well, rule number one, don't mess the medal up. Runners, you know, race rule number one. I'm like,
so why is that?
Everything about your experience was amazing. You had a good race. You had a good experience. You got these awesome swag. But, you know, this thing happened and it's out of our control, but yet we're going to get reamed on it. And so what we had to do after that race is we had to mail 2,600 medals out, individually packaged, you know, and guess how many didn't make it to the destination?
Yeah, probably like 400.
Right. You're going to have the addresses that got ruined, or the medals that got lost in transition. So, you know, out of those people that didn't get their medal, you have more pissed off people because they still don't have their medal in the mailbox.
You compounded the problem.
Oh my gosh, dude. And so it gave me a little bit of a scar when it came to when it came to the obsession that, oh my gosh, you know, I didn't get my race medal. And we're working on it. We're trying, you know, or if that ruins your event when you had a good event, if you are one of the people that, oh, you forgot your medal or the race ran, I've heard races running out of medals. But most races, you know, and here's why these situations can happen. One, I believe that, and correct me if I'm wrong, all race directors, if they're going to offer a medal, want the participants to get the medal. Would you agree? Okay. That's we know that. Number two, Matt, how far in advance do you have to order medals and races to get them on time?
I would say at least 10 weeks. You have to estimate how many. You have a different problem than I do. My races are all between 250 and 400 people. So I have a little bit of more freedom when it comes to, I might have a 4 week, you know, like, hey, I have 200 people signed up. I'm going to order 250 medals. You need to have yours 10 weeks out, but the majority of 5Kers and half marathoners are probably signing up at 9 weeks and 6 days. So you don't even know how many.
Yeah. 4 weeks out. Yeah. Yeah. So you can't even add on. So like you have this cap in mind, but at the time that you order the medals, like our race, just to give people perspective, our race is mid-February, February 22nd, 23rd, 24th-ish, that time of year. We have to order the medals December 1st. We don't even have half.
Nobody's thinking about signing up for a race. Nobody's thinking about signing up for your race.
We don't have half the amount of participants. So all we can bank on is past history. We think, and each medal is $3 to $5. So our medal bill this year was $20,000.
Yeah.
$20,000 for the 5K half marathon and marathon medals for 4,000 plus medals. Now, And you want to get a decent one, because if you don't get a decent one, that's just as good as not having a medal, because people will rip you up for that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, and
this may sound like, I'm not trying to sound like a Debbie Downer here. I'm just trying to give the facts for people to understand that these are the real scenarios that race directors deal with. They have to order 3 months in advance. They want to get a medal that's kind of reasonable. You know, that's nice. That reflects the race. You know, they want to get one that's also affordable, because a lot of races like ours, we have way other big expenses, huge expenses that probably outweigh the importance of the medal. Yet the medal is still important. Like if we pay $20,000 in police too, you know, we pay $75,000 in traffic services, you know? So like those are that right there is $100,000 just for cones and police. So you're talking like those are utmost importance, right? In the level of importance. But of course, I'd be curious if there was ever a poll taken. I'd just be curious how people value the medal, like what the valuation is. Like what percentage of runners would say medal is 10 out of 10 of importance, or 5 out of 10 importance, or I don't care, you know?
Yeah. You got to factor in, like, because as a race director, yes, you want everybody to have a medal, but your number one importance is the course measured correctly? Is the runners going to go down the right? I mean, I've done the Charleston Marathon, and I'm not trying to, you know, poo-poo any race, but like runners went the wrong way, like the first half mile in. Like as a race director, I would be freaking out. That would be like my worst nightmare. I could care less if we were 400 miles short at the finish line. I can deal with that problem, but I can't have 5,000 people going the wrong way, you know, in a race. So for me, that's the focus. That's the you know, and obviously those are major expenses. The medal is a huge part of, and I think a lot of it goes into, you know, if you've got 5,000 people running a marathon and things have changed over the past 40, 50, 60 years, I think runners back in the day were racers. They wanted to know what their pace was. You know, I think the average time of marathons back in the day was probably a lot faster too. Nowadays, you have people that just come in groups with friends. Hey, we're going to finish this half marathon together, even if it takes us, you know, 3.5 hours to do it, which is still a huge accomplishment for someone who's never done a half marathon. They're like, I don't care about anything else except for that finish line and that finisher medal. So you have to keep them in mind. But at the same time, as a race director, that those are the last things that you think about, because you just want to make sure everyone's safe, going the right way, you know, everyone's taken care of, and you obviously have the budget for all that.
So in summary, have a little grace for your race director and race if maybe you do a race and you don't get a medal or they run out or something like that. Just, I think, hey, look, Mr. Matt Hammersmith, I didn't get a country mile medal. That didn't happen. But could you mail me one at some point in the next couple of months? I mean, dude, of course.
We had an issue, not an issue this year, but we had 350 people signed up for the country mile, sold out. I said, all right. I only had 200 belt buckles, because I'm like, you know, I don't want to, you know, they're $26 a piece. These are the biggest. I mean, these things are massive. Have you seen them?
I saw them. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They are huge. They're like a dinner plate. So we're going to smaller ones next year. And I'm like, all right. And the weather was perfect this weekend. I'm like, we could have 200 people finish this thing. So I made an announcement like, hey, I only got 200, you know, just jokingly. And everyone's pretty chill in the ultra scene. I'm like, hey, just by the way, if you're the 201st 100-mile finisher, you're not getting a buckle. And everyone's like, oh, you know. So everyone all day was like, you know, can you save me one? Can you save me one? We ended up giving out 115 out of 200. Wow. Yeah. So which is great.
Now you got
75 for next year.
75
or 85 for next year. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, look, again, I'm not dissing it. I have some medals hung up. You know, it is what it is. Your personal preference is your personal preference. But grace is important. Don't ream your race out or bad review your race because your medal isn't maybe up to expectations. You can, I would love the feedback for sure. I think an email back, hey guys, a great race this weekend. You know, I'd love a bigger medal, or maybe I'd like a unique medal, or, you know, like medals were so-so, or, you know, like just polite, you know, like it's just, there's a lot of, I know how much work Matt puts in. I know how much our staff puts in. I'm sure that all the race directors out there listening, they know how much work they're putting into these races. And, you know, of course we want to offer good stuff, but, you know, like I said, in the last podcast, I want to offer the world and I want to have the best thing I can.
Yeah.
There is also there's a real budget, and then there's real conditions. Like last year, Battleship, you know, half marathon that we put on, it poured the whole race, cold, wet. So instead of, you know, we bought a tent and we got a bunch of those heat sheets at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It cost us like $3,500 extra.
Yeah. Things that you don't plan. Yeah. Things that you're like, oh, we don't. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. No, I get it. Yeah. I did. We've scaled and I try to tell people that come to my races, especially 4 or 5 years ago, I used to take, you know, metal, like wooden metal cutouts and stamp them. Like they were very, very cheap. And I've just tried to scale slowly but surely. And I try to tell people I'm a cost effective race series. We don't charge a lot of money. But we also are very dedicated to the small community that we serve. But yeah, it's just, you have to scale as a race director, and participants have to understand that, yes, we do want the best. We want everybody to have a nice meal and a beer and a nice medal and a nice finisher t-shirt. I mean, we want all those things, but it's not realistic when it comes to like, all right, how many people am I expecting? What are the cost of my venue? And then there's 1,000 other things. Like when I start doing my budgeting, I have to like leave 10 blank line items because I know there's going to be something that pops up like, oh crap, I got to pay for this. Oh, I got to go for this. Like, and we have a small race this weekend. I spent over $1,000 on snacks at our aid station, at our small little 5K looped aid station, more than I probably, you know, I didn't even plan for it. It's just people were eating the food and we had 350 people there, and you got kids and spectators coming up to the aid station table, picking off of just little things that you don't really expect.
You want them to leave, feel like your event kicked ass. So
no, yeah.
I want people to leave Wilmington and be like, that event kicked ass. I'll do whatever it takes. Not every year. Is it going to kick ass every year? I hope it does. Yeah. I will do what I can to make it the best it can be. But you also have to think about some things. And so I think this is a good discussion. I'll put some questions in the podcast blog that you can ask us if you think. And I'm also going to put a poll in there. There's going to be a poll in this podcast, and we'll share the results next time.
Yeah.
Just say how much, you know, on a scale, maybe a scale, how much do you care? And would you give up your medal at the finish line? You know?
Yeah. Good.
Would you take a Starbucks $5 gift card over a
medal? Yeah. So I will say, and this might upset a few folks, but I ran the Boston. Actually, it was the year that we all ran. I think you went 229. I was like 242. I blew up at mile 18 of that one. We were all trying to run fast. Anyhow, I was staying in an Airbnb, and as we got there a little early, and the family was actually just leaving, and they're like, "Oh yeah, we're gonna go to the airport. Or go to the airport. We're gonna go out to California and go to Disneyland out there, or Disney World out there." And so we got to talking to her, and she went to school. The mom that was there, she went to school with Kara Goucher, and she was a really fast runner. And she's like, "Yeah, I was actually supposed to run the marathon this week, but I got a stress fracture and I got injured, so I'm just pulling out. So we're just taking the family to go on vacation." So we stayed at their place all weekend. I went and ran the marathon, got my finisher medal, didn't have Bank of America on it. And as I'm not a medal guy, I don't hang them up anywhere. I got a whole shelf, you know, or I got a whole drawer full. I left my medal in their silverware drawer before we took off. So I know when she got home, she just sent me a message to say, "Hey, you know, I'm going to when I run this thing next year, I'm going to ship this one back to you." And she did. Yeah.
Why would that upset anybody? That's awesome.
Well, just because, you know, I was like, oh, I ran so hard, I earned that medal. Like, yeah, the experience for me was running with you guys for 18 miles. And then the other experience was dying for the last eight.
Right. It's the experience. Dude, at the Olympic trial, Anne Marie, all the girls that we coached to go to Olympic trials, they don't have medals at the Olympic trials.
Yeah.
None of them got medals.
Yeah. It's the experience. It's just making it there for, you know, our local Alyssa Bloomquist, like just making it there. She was injured going into it. She's like, "I'm going because I worked my tail off to qualify. I don't care how bad it goes. I'm just going to go and see what I can do for as long as I can."
Yeah. Anything else?
No, that's it, man. We'll do this again next week.
Yeah. Last thing, just, hey, if you like your medals, hang them up. Send us a picture of your medal rack. I know people have medal racks. More power to you. Just be nice to your race directors if your medal gets lost in
shipping. Transition. All good. All right, see you guys next week.
See you later.